Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lori Davis, and you're listening to The Lori Davis Show here on Blog Talk Radio. We produce a live call talk. If you need to phone in, the number is 515-602-9660. And TGIF, thank goodness it's Friday, the end of another week. And doesn't time fly when you're having fun or busy? Wow, I couldn't believe it. Today, I'm honored and privileged to welcome Christina Smith to the show. She'll be with us in a few minutes. And I met her about 6 months ago. And Christina Smith is open to talk to us today about her struggles with brain injury after her career as an Olympian. She has had an incredible journey of successes and setbacks, just like the rest of us. You don't get to those high places without it. Her upcoming book, Empowered, we're going to talk about her book. And Christina also has a passion for wanting to take her message now of trauma and brain injury to the community at large. I'm excited to share Christina with you and have been anxious to interview her for some time now. She's been featured in the New York Times, interviewed by BBC. The list just goes on and on and on. She's been in a documentary, and she'll talk to us all about that as well. So can't wait to have her join us in a few minutes. In the meantime, I just want to put out there that on Sunday, I'm featuring a 2-hour special on COVID-19. A bit of a different approach, though. We've all been listening to the news for months and months about the numbers and the disaster and the economic crumble of our countries. And I decided I would like to hear some stories from people who are experiencing and being impacted by COVID. So on Sunday, we actually have 3 guests who have had COVID, and also representations from entertainment, education, medical care, health care, a couple of inspirational people coming in to keep us positive and motivated. So it's sounding like a great show to me. I'm looking forward to hosting it. I have a total of 10 guests plus myself coming in to talk to us on COVID-19. And of course, even though we do a live broadcast, the shows are always recorded and archived just a few minutes after we finish an episode. And I post those on the Lori Davis Show Facebook page. So if you want to hear a show that you've missed, that's not a problem. They're there for you. I post them on the Facebook page. It's just a matter of clicking on the picture there, and that'll take you right to the show itself. So looking forward to maybe having some of you listen in on Sunday. We won't have a whole lot of time for call-ins, but a great opportunity to listen to some updates on COVID from various people throughout the community. And we actually have 3 countries represented. It's international, the Bahamas, Canada, and the United States, guests from all 3 areas. So it's a very powerful group that I've put together, and people that I know have lots to share with great information, education, inspiration. And this will be our last broadcast for 2020. I'm going to take a break and get geared up for January, back on the air January 4th, 5 days a week. And I have a wonderful lineup of very special people who will be visiting with us in January. All right, well, I see our guest of the hour, our co-host, my conversational friend, Christina Smith, has arrived, so I'm just going to get her into the studio here. Good afternoon, Christina.
Hello, hello, Lori. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You're sounding great. You're sounding great.
Awesome.
Good.
Bring it out in there.
Well, I've just spent 5 minutes talking a bit about you and what we've got coming up on Sunday with our show on COVID. So I've just given our listeners a little insight, not a whole lot, so we can talk about your career as an Olympian, your upcoming book, a documentary that you just completed, your journey with brain injury and trauma and what you want to do with that. So we have a lot to talk about, my girl. So
I packed a lunch.
So let's start with, I think our listeners, first of all, would love to hear about your career as an Olympian. And I just want to share with my listeners that it was Christina Smith who set me straight on something. And when she used to get interviewed, they would refer to her as a former Olympian. And she corrected them and said, no, once an Olympian, always an Olympian. And I thank you for that, because in my bios, I always had I was a retired teacher. And Christina reminded me, no, you're still a teacher. So over to you with, you know, a startup of what inspired you and the sport that you chose and why you chose it, and just whatever else you'd like to share with our listeners about your career as an Olympian. Over to you, Christina.
Well, frankly, it was a sport that women weren't really involved in because we weren't an official Olympic sport. So anyone that was involved at the beginning were considered pioneers. And I happened to be at the University of Calgary, and I saw a guy, you know, in our faculty that was walking around with like a pair of tights on and a motorcycle helmet, but it was winter time, so it was a little confusing because I'm thinking, okay, is he on his motorbike, but then he has tights on? It just didn't make sense. And so I approached him and I said, you know, what's going on here? And he said, well, actually, you know, I do this sport and it's bobsleigh. And he started telling me, you know, about the extremes and the crashes and the ice burns and the concussions and the, you know, the bruises and just all the speeds and the pressures and the G-forces. I mean, it was just overwhelming. And then he said, you know, you got a good set of legs. You're looking for women. And I just kind of thought of, you know, he was actually asking me to be an astronaut, frankly, because it was out of left field. And I just kind of kindly declined. And mysteriously enough, a few months later, I was asked to model in a fashion show with the modeling agency I was with. And next thing, the guy was actually there. And I'm like, what are you doing here? And he goes, well, I'm actually doing a fundraiser for my bobsleigh team. And I had a friend that came to watch, and she won a door prize, which by chance was a full year bobsleigh club membership, which he ended up giving to me. And that literally started me off.
Wow. I had no idea about that at
yeah.
all.
Kind of different.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I just said, like, it's kind of different because nowadays, of course, they have recruitment camps. They have all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, that was a real, like, smart way to, you know, because the physique and the power, you have to be, you know, strong yet fast. You know, so because you're pushing this heavy object down the ice and then you load into it and have to be able to really relax yourself and be composed and have the fine hands. And they often say at like a surgeon to like get you down the ice. So and of course, you have your courageous brakeman in the back that puts their life in your hands, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they're pushing the sled and as aggressive as you are, but they have to run longer and then load, and then they have to hold on for their life. But frankly,
wow.
You normally hold on for your life when you're with somebody that you're not, you know, you don't really know whether they have the skills to get you down safely. But then again, it's not guaranteed, to be honest. Like anything can happen at those speeds without having brakes until the very end. So,
wow. I remember watching a couple of movies that featured bobsleighing and how stressed I was just watching the movie, worrying about whether or not they were going to make it or not. Wow.
Bike Dance Cool Runnings, is that the movie you're watching?
Yes.
I was actually in that movie.
Were you?
They filmed it. Yes, they filmed it the year that I actually was introduced to bobsleigh, and they recruited extras for the movie, and women, because we weren't an official sport in 1988 when those Olympics occurred in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, that was the debut for the Jamaicans. And so we were fortunate enough to be hired to be extras. And it was phenomenal. And I even had my picture with the late John Candy. So that was quite a special moment.
I guess so. So how long were you in the business of bobsleighing total?
I would say active, like physically doing bobsleigh, very competitively, you know, I'd say around the 12-year mark. Then I was more doing it recreationally and doing coaching and managing different teams. I even coached the Jamaican, a junior, like their developmental team, the Jamaicans, and then the Monaco bobsleigh team, who actually used to have Prince Albert of Monaco on their national team. And so these guys were kind of the next later generations that were breaking through, and with some British bobsleigh coaching and even some Aussies. And yeah, it's just kind of one of those things that you have this passion and you have these skills, and there's so, you know, there's not that many people in the world that do this sport. You know, it's almost like a boutique kind of sport, you know, and it was more so, you know, in the day for pretty much like the rich and famous, you know, kind of thing. Cause I mean, it was very prestigious. It was, you know, a birthplace was in Switzerland, and they actually still have this amazing bobsleigh track, all cleanly made out of ice blocks. And these Italians come up from the northern part of Italy, so they actually speak the German language, so like Swiss German and that. And they construct it from like just these products. You know, it's not an actual bobsleigh track made of the cement, you know, like you can't see it during the summer because it melts. So it's the largest ice sculpture, or one of them, in the world. So, and to go down there with the forces of the G's, like 4.5 to 5 G's of pressure that, you know, people experience on these runs all over in various parts of the world, you know, and speeds of, I mean, my top speed is 140, and people exceed that, you know, especially in like a 4-man bobsleigh, which have 4 people, it's heavier and so forth. Yeah.
I can't even imagine. I can hardly walk. I can hardly walk down the street without tripping over myself. So this is like, I'm actually envisioning all of this as you're describing it and thinking, wow. So, of course, the career would have led you to some travel. So talk a bit about some of the travels and places that you've been. Over to you.
Well, I've been to up to 50. Well, right now it's been 50 countries so far. But a lot of them were outside of bobsleigh, to be honest. So my first introduction was actually Australia. Well, first it was Canada, coast to coast with my parents and my sister. And I mean, that was very important to them, to instill the travel as being something very educational, expanding our, you know, our horizons, and knowing that there was more than our, you know, our hometown that existed. And they really got me to think beyond where I'm from originally, was Montreal. Specifically Mourne Heights and the Laurentians. And so when we moved to Calgary in 88, I joined a very much kind of those artsy-fartsy and at the same time, you know, jock. So I dabbled on both sides of the fence. So, but one of the arts that I pursued outside of playing saxophone was singing. And they brought me to, art brought me to Australia, Spain and Scotland. And then after that, it was like, oh my gosh, the passport was your ticket to freedom to go and play in the biggest play box there is to have. And so, but then of course with bobsling and also doing, I did some equine therapy, which was therapy for horses. So just think of yourself as like a massage therapist for a horse. And so I did some of that, which brought me overseas simultaneously when the women were, when I was, you know, involved with the sport. And then, of course, if I were to kind of catapult many years later, was say an exciting trip was, you know, China, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and Thailand. And it just, you know, islands and everything to me. That is actually part of my book too. It's I have a chapter on just exploring, you know, not only your insides, you know, and really knowing who you are, but it's about exploring, you know, the outside world and to really expand your horizons and make yourself feel uncomfortable. That's the key.
Uh-huh.
So there's growth. Uh-huh. Yeah.
For sure. And, I'm similar in that way that my dad was a World War II veteran, and he always instilled travel in us as well. I think I'm the only one in the family that really has traveled extensively, but I understand exactly what you're saying, and I've had a passport too. I've had lots of them. So thanks for sharing that, because you and I can probably have some conversations around that sometime, some paths that we've probably crossed. I'm always interested in paths that people, we've actually crossed paths before, we just weren't aware of it. Hey,
yeah,
there's my Canadian hay. So let's talk about your book, because you just mentioned that. Tell us a little bit about what is it about the book that inspired you to go there to create a book. The title of your book is Empowered. I love that word. So tell us a little bit about your book. Over to you.
Yeah, thank you. Well, one of the things was when I retired from bobsleigh, and actually during my career, I really valued that giving back to community and going into the schools and going into businesses and speaking and sharing, you know, everything I was experiencing and just bringing people into my world of, you know, of my my sports. And there's so many crossovers with business and the, you know, all the attentions to detail that we go through and the mindset and everything within sport that is so transferable, as well as emotional intelligence and all these little things were just, you know, so there's so much to talk about. And of course, with the kids and keeping me on a real, say, straight and narrow path, in the sense of you, when you get up in front of people, you have to really find the silver lining on everything, you know, and especially the little people, because when you start speaking, you want to give them hope, and you want to always look for the lessons and things. So when I started to get closer to retirement, you know, things got really exciting, you know, more speaking engagements. And then it's kind of started to, you know, as generation of Olympians come by, you know, they want more. But I really had this passion of speaking. And it was something that I never really, I was so kind of going here and there and everywhere. Like I really wasn't really laser focused anymore. And I was bouncing around a lot, and you'll figure out later as we get there or kind of why. But I really, 10 years or so or 12 years after, I was regretting, man, like I still want to speak, but I never really stuck to it. And I always heard that having a book was important to be like your calling card. And so I thought, okay. So anyways, I started, and that was really kind of the one of the reasons why I started writing. And then I realized as well is that so many people throughout my life have said, you have to write a book. Oh my gosh, your adventures and all these things. So I had a lot of, ideas to put into it. But the biggest thing was, I don't want to just talk about myself. I wanted to have a message. I wanted to be empowering to people. I want them to see the vulnerability that putting down in writing, and really encourage people to be vulnerable and to see the growth that comes out of being vulnerable. And in doing so, I also realized and really started to appreciate the things that I had developed within myself. And one is actually most recently is the discovery of what it actually is. This thing that you may hear floating around, emotional intelligence. It's like being intelligent with your emotions, knowing, control them, how to identify when emotions come upon you. And those are different things that you experience as you're an athlete. You know, like you're in the height of competition, and there's certain people that choke and other people that don't. And it's actually without, again, realizing that I had been doing these things and just sharing it with in my pages and going through, you know, everything from what transition was out of sport, what was living from my power. Like, we all have power, but, you know, where does that come from? Like you were talking about, like all those travels that I've done, you know, sharing, bringing people into that world, you know, that I was in, as well as, you know, reflecting back. Like now I'm going to be 52 actually on Christmas Day. And when I was writing this, I had reached, you know, the half century mark. And so I was reflecting back on all these things about how you should really, or at least I did. And again, these are, I'm not telling anybody what they should do. It's more so, this is what I did, and you may consider this, you know, and really about living consciously and being aware of so much. And when you feel that discomfort, like I was mentioning, almost run towards it versus shy away, because you're missing so much that could come of that growth experience. And one of the chapters was actually about the late discovery of my brain injury as well, and the rehabilitation, but the mental health struggles I went through, and just the hope that I give people if ever they had, you know, such a thing happen, or maybe they didn't know that they had one, and now I'm connecting the dots for them. So yeah, that was kind of that. Those are things that evolved out of writing that book, which actually has really helped me find a way that by leveraging my Olympian status, you know, I can actually help with that voice, because I think it's awful that there's a lot of us that, you know, some of us aren't meant to get out there and to, you know, be a spokesperson. You know, they're just not wired that way. But there's a lot of people that have a platform that they can leverage to do good in the world. And sometimes they don't use it. And I've always thought, you know, there's something that that I truly want to help others with. And it could be whether they had something that they were doing that I wanted to help them with that, or else maybe I had something of my own, but I literally was not thinking that this would be it. So it's, and it's all just very recent, this discovery. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about the brain injury and how that was connected to your career and how you discovered that and what are some things that you did about it. Because brain injury, my husband had a stroke 9 years ago, and a lot of people don't understand that when these things happen to us, there's brain injury there. And then, of course, we have all of our people who've been in car accidents, motorcycle accidents. We're all, I say, just an accident away. So tell us a little bit, because you've experienced it, I have not, but over to you to talk a little bit about how you even began to realize that that was going on for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I've been asked, you know, when do you think it happened? Like, was it an event? And it actually, like, I don't believe it was based on an event more so than micro vibrations, micro concussions that I had experienced throughout my, you know, my long career. And that's the thing is that brain injuries can be cumulative. So it's not that one blow or that one car accident or literally like slipping on the ice and landing on your bum and the vibrations go up your spine into your brain. Or falling out of a tree, you know, as a kid or being dropped as a baby, like literally like all those things that happen, they can stay with you for the rest of your life. And the thing is that that's the part where I really feel like, oh my goodness, if people only knew, and then there could be way more empathy, you know, in the world around what potentially people may have been or may be challenged with, as well bring hope to them to say, you know what, like myself, I had just literally I was at a brain injury event. I was asked to come as an Olympian to support another Olympian that had been in a ski accident. He was actually a crazy Canuck, Dave Irwin, who had been, you know, he had a terrible brain injury, but he had gone through a recovery process that, you know, through very special types of, you know, a special system, which is called low energy neurofeedback system, which is basically rewiring. Let's just say the layman term is you're essentially rewiring your brain. And but the thing that really identifies it is called a QEEG, which is a quantitative electroencephalogram, big mouthful of words there, which is really a brain map. And so this brain map can actually identify where the function or the dysfunction is occurring in your brain. So you can see where it's overactive, underactive, not active at all, and I'm sure we know some of those people out there. I'm probably one of them in many situations, but you know, and then there's, you know, normal. And the thing is that when they actually did that scan after this doctor, literally she got up at this event and she's like, you know, to the crowd, you may not realize it, but you may have a head injury. And she started seeing all the symptoms, you know, literally, you know, long-term or short-term memory loss, your mood swings, whether it's aggression or depression, anxiety, fear, facial recognition, so literally forgetting faces, which was actually something I had done, and reintroducing myself at functions to people that I had already introduced myself at the beginning of the night, you know. And it was just really like an aha moment hearing these symptoms, and that's what compelled me to go up to her and say, we need to talk, you know. And so from there, I literally, you know, I was able to get the scan, this QEEG, and I started on the road, the path to recovery or to rewiring, essentially. And it was through initially Dr. Tracy Thompson. Then it segued over to a private clinic at Pure North, which is in Calgary. And they had a specialist in there, Mary Donaldson, but her husband, who was essentially one of the gurus in the world, Dr. Stuart Donaldson, who had done like 42 peer-reviewed studies. Like, I mean, I was in the best hands I could have possibly been into, you know, in with. And so going through that process, I was becoming like myself again. And the sad part is that I didn't know another former
a team athlete, had been going through similar symptoms to mine, and he actually commits suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And when I heard that, that just gave me the biggest wake-up call, because I was like, people need to know about this. But at the same
mm-hmm.
time, again, I just thought, well, is this a one-off thing, or is this like everywhere? Like, I wasn't sure, of course, because it was all new to me. And anyway, so to make a long story short, literally, I revived myself. I went back to, I won a scholarship to go to Russia and Greece with, you know, to do a master's in sport business administration. And at the Russian International Olympic University, of all places, is amazing. And there they have, of course, had the bobsleigh track. And, of course, that's like candy giving, you know, like dangling a carrot from somebody like me. So I thought, well, you know, I have done all this work, but, you know, what's one little ride? So I ended up going for a run. But, unfortunately, the Olympian unfortunately, his steering broke and he crashed me again. Or he crashed me, I should say, on corner 9 all the way down to 17. And I basically wasn't aware at the time that I had reconcussed myself. Because again, like those symptoms just aren't apparent. Always like those consistent things
mm-hmm.
that people look for. Like there's so many other things. And then they literally, and I know this might sound funny, but they gave me like a shot of vodka and a Lindt chocolate, and they sent me back to school. it was hilarious. But then again, I went off to Greece with this, you know, exclusive scholarship that isolated me from the rest mm-hmm. of my class. And so I was on my own, and I just thought I was stressing out from school and from everything. But I have
mm-hmm.
to tell you, I was in a dark place that I'd never been. And
mm-hmm.
I counted, you know, my lucky stars that I got home and
mm-hmm.
that I was like, something's up. But I just, again, we start blaming ourselves. And I ended up finding out, oh, it was horrible. Another Olympian was found, you know, dead in his dormitory, and he actually he had an overdose of sleeping pills, prescription, and alcohol in his system,
mm-hmm.
and he had had a history of, you know, depression and that. And I just started connecting the dots, Lori. I tell you, I just was
oh
my God, I need to do something. So that has been my driving force, as well as my doctor. Recently, April 4th, the guru, Dr. Stuart Donaldson, he's passed. So I'm even more motivated to continue his legacy. And
mm-hmm.
we've just lost another Olympian in May of suicide as well. And all these things are where they're starting to tell me, you know, and I call it a hidden epidemic or a hidden pandemic, pardon me. And
mm-hmm.
I really feel this has really started momentum, because literally I have connected with, UCLA. They're doing some studies with the brain and sports. And I have a professor in the UK that's also involved, who's done studies, and he has special sensors that actually pick up all the pressures and the abuse that goes
uh-huh.
on, like on a
uh-huh.
sliding run. We also
uh-huh.
have a coach that's a UK coach who is actually coaching the Germans, who's involved with the study. And so it just seems like we all love sport, but we just know if we have knowledge now, we need to put some data and, you know, get data from it, have all the countries, you know, involved, all the federations involved, so that we can start finding solutions for sport. And
mm-hmm.
because damage is damage. And if we know that there's ways of rewiring people, non-invasive, non-drug, if we know that there's ways of just preventative measures, you know, to approach sports. And this is not just sliding. This is all sports.
Yes.
So we're really a proactive group that is very pro sports, but also pro safety.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
Yeah. So it's yeah. So the New York
Times
has been, you know, part of my life recently with a story that Matthew Futterman put out, and he just really he showcased it so well, and now he's done one with skeleton sliding, and he's done another one with skeleton recently, and we're really we've just the BBC has contacted us for that as well, for interviews around sports and brain injuries, and now the Netherlands. So the word is getting out that we're really trying to be proactive. I mean, we had safety belts, right, in cars, and now we do. So there has to be that time when things start emerging. But, you know, change scares people. And but I always say with discomfort comes growth and learning, and I believe there's a huge learning out of this.
Absolutely. Well, that all sounds amazing and very interesting. And I'm just, as you were speaking, Christina, I was thinking of all these people that I know who are either brain injured, athletes that I know who've had trauma. And of course, you know, my work in the world on suicide. So I'm connecting some dots here as you're speaking. So thank you for that. Let's talk a little bit about your, what I'd like to know is, it's when you, what does it take? I titled the show, "What Does It Take to Be an Olympian?" And you're giving us a very good picture of what
it takes.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So let's look at some of the qualities that were necessary, because in order to be successful, we have to be willing to fail. And in order to be successful, it doesn't come on a silver platter, right? So what are some personal qualities that Christina has that has supported you in getting to where you are right now? What are some qualities you needed to have?
Well, those qualities, I would say, started within my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents. You know, it seems to be that I've come from a line of pioneer mentalities and very driven, very much like, if it's not built, let's build it, you know? And I mean, I had a great grandpa and a grandpa that built and owned ski hills, and they were just so much they were builders. And even my grandpa DeBosco, he's in the Laurentian Hall of Fame skiing, but for being a builder in the ski industry. And then, you know, my dad, he was just such a driven man, very athletic. And he was the first to be actually a level 4, which is the highest level for ski instructors to achieve that. The level 4 status was only, you know, given to, or at least they thought, you could only be good enough if you skied, you know, 7 days a week. And he only came up on weekends. And my mom, who was 13, taught him when he was 17 how to ski, you know. So my dad was just like, I want to be good, you know, like I want to excel. Mm-hmm. And so he used to throw himself, you know, into these classes that he knew that were, you know, probably over his head. But he knew that if he surrounded himself with the greats, he would become a great. And so very, very driven. But the thing is, the twist is, this is where my determination, I believe, also comes from, is again, part-time ski instructor, you know, weekends only, does a level 4, and he got failed literally 4 years in a row just by like a half a point or a point or something like that. And then finally he's like, kept saying, I'll be back, I'll be back. And then the fifth year, of course, they're like, this guy isn't going anywhere. So it ended up being the first time in Canada to get a level four, you know, in all of Canada. So just having that background. And I mean, my mom brings the, you know, that the nurturing and the oh my goodness, like being there, you know, being there at all my races and volunteering and mm-hmm. I mean, she volunteered, you know, through the whole choir stuff and, you know, mm-hmm. like the band and like, I mean, there, you have those two sides that are just so nurturing in their own way, even though, you know, dad was more the one, use your head. Whereas, you know, like figure it out and like not, you know, always giving us the answers. So, I mean, it really it taught us to apply ourselves and to rely on ourselves. Whereas, you know, my mom was more like packing the lunches and looking after all those details of making that be, you know, prepared for things. And I mean, honestly, like, oh my goodness, to a fault, you know, looking mm-hmm. after so much. And I mean, when I, so those qualities, you know, perseverance and at the same time, you know, being healthy and looking after yourself. And, you know, like I say, I give credit to my mom making sure all the lunches, you know, and everything was, you know, to the T with the diet and everything. And then of course, you know, I have healthcare people that were in my life. And initially, you know, we had the random, you know, volunteer chiropractor or physio or, you know, massage therapist. And then of course, once you became an official Olympic sport, you had, you know, like I had my solid naturopath, you know, Dr. Trevor Hoffman. That was, he was just, I mean, he was so innovative and so ahead in the natural ways of keeping your body healthy, which really my mom introduced me to initially. And so that to me is so important, because you are what you eat. You are, you know, how much you sleep and how much you exercise and develop your mind and, you know, the visualization that comes with bobsleighing and just the mindset is so important. And I have to say, I had mentioned it earlier before, emotional intelligence. And that is, for me, a new, say, label for something that I wasn't aware I had been mm-hmm. doing. But at the same time, I wasn't aware where I could have been better. And mm-hmm. that excites me now, because I'm a perpetual student. I mean, it's just like, if there's something that I could do to be the, you know, better than I am today, that mm-hmm. is just my, you know, my driving force. And it really inspires me. And I encourage anybody that if they haven't, say, dealt with, you know, things in their life, and whether it's trauma, whether it's even in parents are not perfect, okay? And so our parents to death, you know. But there's also things like a child, you know, and there's certain that even their parents had done that may have done through legacy, you know. And so one of the things that I'm learning is that through my upbringing, there were certain things that, you know, could have been better, but then they could have been worse, or they were perfect, or, you know, or they were, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Gross. Intelligence area that I believe is really a turnkey to life right now for me, because I really, you know, I thought there was always that I wanted to do, and this is the gift that keeps on giving. And right. The group is actually UEQ, Y-O-U-EQ. That is where I've been learning my stuff. And so I'm actually in school right now as a student doing this. And it's, it's exciting. So if you're asking me about what makes an Olympian, you know, besides going into the gym and, you know, having the nutrition and the visualization and, you know, meditation, and the practitioners and, you know, that strong work ethic. And I mean, I just think that, it's, you can't just have one thing. Like, your equipment, of course, is important. I mean, it's crucial, but if you have the best equipment and you don't have the best mindset, especially on race day, you're as, you know,
right.
You're as good as your weakest link. So
right.
It's like any business, any leader, any person,
mm-hmm.
You're as good as your weakest link.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So I guess we're going to wrap up in a few minutes. Just make sure that you're staying in one spot there because we missed a little teensy bit. You were breaking up a little bit. So just be mindful of that. Tell us a little bit about, but you know, when you talked about your parents and you spoke about all of the aspects of what it takes, at the end of the day, though, you were the person that did the work and you were the person that pulled it off and you were the person that sacrificed. So tell us a little bit about some of the sacrifices you've made to get there.
That's a very, very good point, Lori, because a lot of people, like there's a lot of mentors out there. There's so many people that I have to thank. Unbelievable. And of course, parents are number one for me. But that is so key, is that you are the one that takes action. And that's something that, you know, no matter which mentor you have, like it's really when the rubber hits the road, like you're the one that has to make it happen. And so the sacrifices, I mean, the first one that just popped in my head was really, I mean, you know, I had teammates and they'd go out, you know, for beverages after sliding, you know, and they'd go over timesheets and they'd discuss things. But there was like that social aspect that I missed out on. And I was not wired that way. I went home and I was just right on my equipment, preparing things, preparing for the next day, making sure I had enough sleep. I was well nourished. Like I was a little bit of a machine, but I was so in my bubble. But I did miss the bonding with my teammates and just, you know, because there is those challenges that when you're not close with your teammates, you know, they can get ostracized, you know, and the thing is that especially, you know, when everyone's competitive and when, you know, women are fiercely competitive and plus our sport requires a lot of time doing maintenance. So like actually working on the equipment to have like just, you know, a minute run, you know, a couple minutes run, minutes of actually being on the ice in one session compared to the hours that go into preparing your equipment and, you know, doing your therapy treatments. And I mean, it's very similar to a sprinter, you know, 100 meters, it's done, you know, and within seconds. And so sacrifices, I would really think more so around the social aspect would be that. And also I was very privileged. I stayed at home till I was literally finished my sport. So I left the house at 35. Isn't that amazing? And so literally I stepped out into the real world. And I mean, here I am, you know, I'm still feeling like a teenager. And I mean, I'm not married, have no kids. I literally did not even really think about that until I was done my career. And even then, I haven't really embraced that kind of side of life. And I've never really been in the mindset of having children. So it's not, I don't feel like I've really, I don't know. I can't really say I've never thought about it, but I always thought that first you have to find Mr. Right, you know, and fall in love and all those things come first. So I would say that, you know, the career, the second phase of life is, of course, you know, delayed from that. The sacrifices of course, the physical sacrifices of, you know, having been delayed with the brain injuries that actually I didn't realize were brain injuries. So I actually just kept thinking that I was, you know, I had to snap out of it, like get a life, like, come on, like, why can't you stay focused and all these different things. So there was a lot of abuse on myself that is because of those sacrifices. Yeah, but you know what? You can't look back in regret because you have to. Like, I just really tell myself my present state is I'm figuring where I'm fitting right now in the sense of where to use these, whether you call them gifts or experiences that I've had and all the people that I've met in my life. I mean, I can't say traveling was a sacrifice. No, that was an asset. There's so much that I have to say I'm so blessed with finding, you know, meeting new people all over the world. I have, you know, two languages, my French and my German, and, you know, and they've been excelled, you know, through travel and sports. And it's just one thing after the other. I really try to see those sacrifices, but at the same time say to myself that they brought me where I am today.
Absolutely. Well, they're necessary for our journey, but a lot of times when we have accomplished things, people have this perception that we just arrived there, and that's not the truth. So thank you for sharing that. Now, as we wind down here, Christina, first of all, I want to thank you for taking time out to be here today. Secondly, how do people reach you? If I'm interested in having you come in as a speaker or wanting, when your book is ready, to connect with that, how do people contact you to do business with you?
Sure. Actually, I have a new website that's being developed right now, and you can actually contact me there, and it's called authorchristinasmith.com.
Okay.
And so that's one location. You can also, with a new website that I have up right now, it's called concussionshope.com.
Okay.
And that's another free resources, which will be put on there with videos and just a hub for anyone that has any questions around brain injuries or want questions answered or material downloadable PDFs. You name it, and tons of sport and research studies, everything science-based. So that's an avenue. As well, I would encourage people when the documentary comes out on the brain injuries, that would be something that will be spoken about on Concussions Hope website. So when we have that, and let's see, so that can be something to look forward to.
Do you have a Facebook page? Do you have a Facebook page?
Oh, you betcha. I actually have Facebook, which is Christina Natalie Smith. And Natalie is spelled with a N-A-T-H-A-L-I-E. So Christina, and it's H is spelled my first name, and then the Natalie, and then Smith. So that's on Facebook. I also have my Instagram, which is Olympian Christina Smith, and also the LinkedIn. I'm under Christina Smith there, and
there we go.
I think Twitter is push start go. everything going on.
Right. Well, we have lots of ways to reach you, and once again, I just want to thank you for your time today. And appreciate you spending the hour with us and sharing some wonderful, terrific information with my listeners. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lori. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And I'm really delighted. It was a real honor, Lori. Thank you again.
All right. Bye for now. I'm Lori Davis. You've been listening to The Lori Davis Show here on Blog Talk Radio. My guest today, Olympian Christina Smith, and lots of great information about her journey in sports, brain injury, research, documentary, and even modeling. I didn't know that about her. I found out all kinds of great things today. So I've even taken some notes. Anyway, thanks so much for being here, everyone. And on Sunday, stay tuned, a two-hour special on COVID-19. I have 10 guests coming in to speak about their experience. They're each going to do a 10-minute presentation. People from all different walks of life, some inspirational stories included, and some guests who actually contracted COVID or have been tested positive and how they're handling it. So I look forward to doing our show, and that will be our last show for 2020, and we'll be back on January 4th with an incredible lineup of guests coming in for the new year. Bye for now, and have a great weekend, everyone.